For 5 decades, Terry Lenzner has been one of Washington's most powerful inside players, working behind the scenes to get to the bottom of scandals, controversies, and mysteries, ranging from the murder of 3 young civil rights workers that inspired the film Mississippi Burning, to Watergate, the impeachment of President Clinton, and the death of Princess Diana. Now, for the first time, he tells the story of his remarkable half-century career probing politicians, celebrities, governments, and corporations in The Investigator. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Terry Lenzner to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
It's a delight to have you here. So ultimately, when you have to fill in that form of saying occupation, do you consider yourself an investigator?
I usually put down lawyer, because I am a lawyer, or I put down chairman, because I'm chairman of the investigative group and the law firm. And it depends upon who's asking.
But you think of yourself as an investigator.
I do. I actually do. From an instinct standpoint, from my history, and from, frankly, just getting up in the morning and enjoying what I do, I think more of as an investigator than a lawyer. But the lawyer part of it is also certainly a significant part of it.
What brought you into that realm, do you think?
Well, that's a great question, and let me make it as short as I can. I was a second-year law school student at Harvard, and at the end of the summer, I worked at a big New York law firm. One of the named partners, who happened to be the grandson of the abolitionist, called me into his office and said, "Terry, I've been watching you, and what you need to do is forget about practicing law and go down to see my friends at the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, because they're doing very interesting work." And I said, "Well, I don't know anything about civil rights, Mr. Garrison." And he said, "Just do what I tell you to do," which I thought was a good suggestion. And I did exactly what he told me to do, and I went down to Washington, and I got hired. And they told me that next summer, 64, was going to be the Mississippi Freedom Summer, and we'll put you in Mississippi if you come with us, because it's going to be historic. That's when I decided to go.
You investigated the murder of 3 civil rights workers, an infamous event that inspired the film Mississippi Burning. I assume you grow up quick and you learn a lot in a situation like that. It seems that way.
I couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly right. You grow up very quick. I was wet behind the ears, obviously, because I had just gotten out of law school, and I hung around with some FBI guys and some senior lawyers from the DOJ, and I learned a lot, and I had to, because it was a necessity.
Obviously,
and I learned a hell of a lot from interviewing victims of assaults by the law enforcement people in Philadelphia.
Obviously, there's a lot that we as a society learn from an event like that.
I hope so. That's great.
What personally did you learn?
Well, I learned, frankly, that having grown up in New York City myself, that the South was a level of brutality that I never even thought of. And I'm not condemning the entire South, but the law enforcement guys, who obviously had taken it upon themselves to protect the citizenry from infiltration of a new race, were brutal, absolutely brutal. And so in the Mississippi Burning case, when I read the confession of the Klansman, basically he was telling us, he was describing that they took the boys down a road, they pulled them out of the car, they fought over who was going to get the right to shoot which one, and then they shot him in cold blood. They didn't know anything about them, except that they were in Mississippi coming down from the north to register African Americans to vote. And I saw the same thing, Joe, if I could add, when I went over to Selma and monitored the assault on the marches on Bloody Sunday that was led by Congressman John Lewis, and basically watched the same thing happen over there, except it was not quite as bloody. There was no shooting.
Later in your career, you were counsel in the Senate Watergate Committee. You investigated President Nixon. You followed the money trail that led to the Watergate burglary and cover-up. At what point did you realize, as a member of that committee, in coming into it, of how serious everything was?
Another great question. I can tell you that in terms of seriousness of the level of people we might investigate, it never crossed my mind that we would end up investigating senior members of the president's cabinet. not to mention the president himself and the senior people around him. Because very quickly, as I tell you, the break-in of the Watergate actually started in February of 1969 when Ehrlichman sent Tony Ulasewicz to New York to sign up to be head of enemies list team, meaning the president wanted a very tough, intimidating group to be the enemy list controllers, so that when somebody was put on the list, this staff group would go after them.
Again, having no idea it would end up being this incredible case, you find yourself delivering a congressional subpoena to a sitting U.S. president. Lucky you.
Well, it's a little bit, let me give you a quick backup on this, because it's a little more complicated than that.
Sure.
Previously, I had worked for Don Rumsfeld as the head of the legal service program, which was 2,000 lawyers serving the poor throughout the country. And because I got into conflicts over the Nixon administration's policy not to allow aggressive representation by lawyers for the poor, which is what the program was supposed to be all about, I was terminated. So having been terminated to be placed in the position in the Watergate Committee of pursuing the president, I had to be extremely careful not to appear to be partisan, which I was. I mean, I was extremely careful, not partisan. And when I wrote the subpoena and was told to go down and serve it on the president or his lawyers, I really was careful because I just didn't want to look like I was vindictive and that it was payback. But by that point, frankly, the administration was so confronted with problems and questions and crises that I didn't hear any blowback from that.
Do you become more cynical about our government and about politics when you witness something like that and you're a part of it firsthand?
It's hard not to become cynical. And yes, the answer is it's part of the job description that you have to endure that and try to balance it off. And what I was able to do, Joe, in my situation was I was able to balance it off because of the incredible wisdom and judgment of the senators that I was working for, including Senator Ervin from North Carolina, Senator Baker, and Senator Weicker from Connecticut. These people were statesmen, and they were not out to get the president. It was a totally nonpartisan environment. The Democrats and Republicans worked together. We worked with the staff people. Fred Thompson was the senior staff member for the Republicans. And indeed, when we, along with one of the investigators for the Republicans, unearthed the taping system in the White House, we recommended that the Republican investigator testify to it so that it would appear to be, and it was, a bipartisan group, that the Republican investigator was disclosing the existence of the taping system.
Juxtapose that position with working with President Clinton's defense team, being on the other side defending the president during his impeachment hearings.
You're asking terrific questions. I mean, that was exactly the opposite situation from my perspective, because instead of having a nonpartisan perspective on this, that we were going to seek the facts as they came out, we were not prejudiced, we were not seeking to put anything on one particular candidate or one particular party, that was just the opposite. So that was, from my perspective, get Clinton out of office. That was what I thought the motivation was. And by the same token, the Democrats had similar reactions, which were not necessarily bipartisan at all, and equally, can I say, cutting and hard-edged. And so it was not a rational process as far as I was concerned.
You were founder and chairman, as we mentioned, of Investigative Group International. What do you see your work being? Of at what point you get called in a situation?
It varies. It varies from clients. Sometimes we will get a call from a foreign government to help them with. I'll give you an example. The Mexican government asked us to do some research on people who were defaulting loans when they were having their bank crisis. That would be us. They were driven to that because they needed excellent investigators and researchers in Mexico, and versus a company who was a target of a hostile takeover, who would call us and ask us to do a profile of the company that was raiding them, identify issues that could be used to stop the raid or to convince the shareholders of the company that they were better off with the company as it existed then. It should not be provided, it should not be given over to the raiders. So it really, it depends on, and both of those examples, Joe, are rush, we need everything today or yesterday. And a leisurely request for something is almost never in the agenda.
It's a fascinating story that you tell. The book is The Investigator, 50 Years of Uncovering the Truth. Terry Lenzner, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate you taking the time out.
Joe, thank you, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Again,
I hope I helped.
Indeed. I thank you very much for spending the time and sharing with us. The name of the book is The Investigator. Terry Lenzner is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.